Last week, millions of Americans watched a rescue story unfold on Good Morning America. A college basketball coach and her nephew were caught in a rip current. And one of the people at the center of the story is my next guest, Sam Proffitt. Sam is the Ocean Rescue Director for Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina, a firefighter, paramedic, veteran ocean rescue lifeguard, and a member of the International Drowning Research Alliance. For decades, he's worked at the intersection of rescue medicine and drowning prevention. He has advanced degrees in MBA and master's in public health and is working on his doctorate. If that doesn't say enough about what Dr. Spielman told me yesterday, we need to find the link between research and people who are actually doing the work. And I think we've got our next guest, Sam Proffitt, who can tell us more about that. We'd like to start today with the recent Good Morning America story as a starting point for a broader conversation about drowning, CPR, media coverage, misinformation, and why the way we see these incidents are reported matters. Sam Proffitt, welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety. And you have a lieutenant with you told me.
I do. I have, Lieutenant Jamie Meese is with me right over
Well, welcome, Jamie Mead.
here.
Okay, let's start. Why don't we start with the incident? And you can tell me you were there at that. I didn't realize you were there at that incident rescue. So,
Yeah, absolutely. So it came in after hours for us. So typically, the last person gets off duty at 7:30 p.m. So it was after hours. we got multiple calls about it. So when you're en route and it's something that you can kind of judge if it's going to be, a legit call most of the time or not. You get multiple callers, you're like, okay, it's probably something to this. So when I arrived, I found four swimmers appear to be in distress about 50, 55 yards off the shore. A bunch of bystanders waved me down. And so when I went to enter the water, I was kind of hyper-focused on, I could tell it was a young boy. That was kind of doing the classic ladder climb, right? So about to be submerged, at kind of the late stages of drowning. So I was focused on, approaching him as quickly as possible. I made contact with the boy, got him on the buoy. At that time, I hit something else under the water. And that was a adult patient, Mrs. Nicole Woods, who has been on Good Morning America. She had drowned. She was totally submerged at that time. So I got her on the buoy, her nephew, and then swam them back. As I was making my way to shore, our police department showed up. They entered the water to assist me getting Miss Woods, to dry sand. We started the drowning protocol, CPR, and then she was transported to the trauma center.
well, that's pretty amazing because she survived in the story. So, what in that story? Because I know it's hard, news outlets only have so much time to get people to listen. What is accurate and what isn't an accurate? Or maybe the question is, what should be told so people can understand more about prevention?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty, loaded question. I think often, the news tries, to do a good job with getting accurate information out, but you have, different bystanders who, see different things or have different thoughts on it. So sometimes it can be difficult, but I think the overarching important factor is it's just understanding that the ocean can be dangerous, right? And you need to respect it. And, drowning prevention, I really feel, starts before you even leave your house to come to the beach. Right. You need to be thinking, okay, what are the water conditions there? Are the lifeguards going to be on duty? Are they flying, yellow flags, red flags? And then, do we have flotation? Right. All these drownings that we typically go on, I mean, if you have flotation, it's going to keep you above the surface. So they need to be thinking about, okay, if the lifeguards aren't there and I'm insisting on going in, I need to take some form of flotation with me in the event I am caught in a rip current or something of that nature, at least to have something to hold on to stay afloat.
Okay, so I have just one question because I'm not a medical expert, a paramedic, any of this, but I've been heard from Justin Semstrat and everyone that everyone should learn CPR with breaths and compressions who lives around water. So One, the piece that caught my mind in the Good Morning America was that she was brought out and compressions were started. Did that include breasts, or are we just talking about compressions?
It did. So initially, like I said, I was the only medical provider and, lifeguard on scene. Our police department helped me bring her in. So once they got her pulled up to dry sand, they immediately started compressions. I dropped my buoy, I ran to my truck, and then got the BBM, AED, oxygen, things like that. And I started with the rescue breaths right away. So, five
Yes.
rescue breaths while they're doing CPR. And then we went into the normal, CPR progression or treatment. So, and I'll say this, it's what Justin or Dr. Simsrott said. I think we know for certain, without question, pre-hospital bystander CPR is extremely important, right? So someone goes, has a out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. I mean, the data has proven it time and time again. Early recognition, early CPR, early AED pays off, right? You have superior outcomes with that. As professional providers, I think we understand the importance of aggressive airway management, ventilations, things like that. The only caveat with that is that I would hate to see a bystander that never practices compression or ventilations, lose sight of doing compressions, trying to ventilate a patient. Maybe they have a pocket mask they don't know how to use. It's ineffective. And with that, it's really detrimental because you're taking time away from doing compressions to
Right.
provide inadequate ventilation. So like anything else, I think that it's definitely important as a professional, responder, whether you're, EMT, paramedic, everyone should understand the importance of, aggressive airway management, any type of, hypoxic, driven cardiac arrest. But, for a bystander, at minimum, it needs to be, CPR. If nothing else, start the compressions. And then when an advanced level provider comes on scene, they should then go straight to the airway.
Right. I think that's what was said to me, but they were saying, well, as a parent, you should have both, because if it's your child, that's a different situation. So,
Absolutely.
yeah. So, I just also read, and this not may not be true, that you've had 60 rip current incidents in like 3 weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah, probably about that. I think how many we have coming off Memorial Day weekend? 30?
And 15 in 1 day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had a lot. It's probably, if not the busiest, the top, two busiest starts of the summer, for us. And I think it, also extends to our neighboring beaches as well. A lot of the other beaches have been busy.
So explain that to our listeners, because I'm here in Hawaii. A lot of people listen, but they're all over the world. Where is Wrightsville Beach in North Carolina?
Yeah, so it's the southern or southeastern aspect or area of North Carolina. So it's below the Outer Banks and just north of Myrtle Beach,
Okay.
South Carolina. So we're like almost at the end of North Carolina heading south before you go into South Carolina.
And how many visitors or people do you think you have at the beach and just generally? I don't know.
I mean, that's tough. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands. I mean, so we are an island, so we have a drawbridge, and on any given, weekend per day, you can have 30,000 cars come over that bridge. So, that doesn't account for, the hotels and things like that. So it is a very, very populated area for only about 4 or 4.5 miles of beach.
So, do you? Here's another piece, data, and you are doing your doctorate, and I want to get into another piece down the way on AI because I think you are studying those issues, right? AI?
Yes.
Okay, good. I want to know about data. That seems to be the biggest issue people are talking about. You can't solve the problem unless you have accurate data. And that means not fatal drownings, but non-fatal drownings also. Are you able to collect that kind of data?
No, I think we're still struggling just to get an accurate count of, drowning or fatalities. It's again, a drowning, obviously being on the coast, we focus rip currents, right? But a drowning could be in a lake, it could be in a bathtub,
Right.
so it's very difficult, when we're looking at overall drownings to compile those that are, coastal, water rescue oriented versus those that occurred in a bathtub. in a central part of the state.
Correct.
But yeah, I mean, that's the general problem worldwide is accurate data. The CARES registry, which is a very robust data set that looks at out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, is attempting to capture a lot of the drowning data. And they really are doing the best, but it's also self-reported. So they're relying on, EMS agencies to submit that data to them to capture it. So I think efforts are being made, but it's a huge gap worldwide to really understand, fatal drownings. I can guarantee you we probably haven't even touched the start of understanding, if we start looking at non-fatal drownings.
Right. That's exactly right. So for one fatal drowning, they're telling me 5 to 6 non-fatal drownings. So here in Hanalei Bay, we'd have to report 1,000 drownings, which wouldn't go very well public relations wise, right?
Right, absolutely. And when we're looking at really the like things like the efficacy of the drowning treatment and things we do, we really need to understand that as well, because some of these drownings, it's a drowning, but it did not become fatal, perhaps due to the pre-hospital treatment or the treatment that they received. So to understand, things like the efficacy of the treatment, is it effective, is it not? So it makes that very difficult to, like I said, understand really, the effectiveness of some of the treatments that we provide.
Yes, everybody said this. And Dr. Spielman has his classification system, which I know in the US, I think maybe some people are using, but not very many. Do you know about his classification system of
I do,
drugs?
yes, ma'am.
Can you use that, or have you used it, or?
So, when we're looking, we're somewhat constrained by when we are running reports on how things are coded. And like I said, I will, it is getting better, right? So I definitely want to say that it is getting better, but sometimes things can be coded as maybe breathing difficulty or something like that. And the although yes, it is breathing difficulty, but the cause of it is drowning. And so, capturing some of those, the coding aspect, and that's from multiple levels, right? I can't tell you, when you're looking at, different types of codes and like ICD-9s and 10 codes, how to solve that. But, to your point, yeah, it is still a problem. Like I said, kind of really capturing all of that, whether, whatever classification system you use, it just needs to be universal.
So drowning is preventable and drowning is a process. I think there should be more information going out, not just about the incident and the rescue, everything that went on there, but something to educate people about drowning is a process that they didn't drown. She didn't, it made it seem like she didn't drown, but she did drown. She was, right? So what do you say to that? Sam, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's when we're kind of getting into the real specific aspects of drowning. Yeah, absolutely. It is a process, and it starts just from initially, often people start to panic, and that's the first start of the process. Like it's human nature, right? They're out in the water, they kindly feel themselves getting pulled away from shore, and human instinct is to try to swim back. Well, you're not effective swimming back. So most people start to swim a little faster and harder, and you're still not making progress. And then you start to panic, and that's when the drowning process starts. And simply, it'd be the same if you got on a treadmill and ran full speed. Eventually you're going to get tired, but unfortunately, when you're in the aquatic environment and it's deep, you're going to start to become submerged. So, I think that we spend a lot of time on messaging, on break the grip of the rip, what to do. But that rip current awareness and prevention, like I said, it needs to start before you leave your home. Otherwise, we're never going to be effective. Like I said, if you just focus on, okay, I'm going to swim parallel, well, that's if you can't swim at all, you're not going to be swimming parallel, right? And so, like I said, it really needs to start before you leave your home to make sure you're prepared for, like I said, rip currents, lightning, sunscreen, all those things you would be, aware of at the beach. Rip current awareness needs to be part of that.
All right, so let's talk about rip currents. We had Bruce Hopkins come out here. I don't know if you know who he is at
I've
Buffalo.
heard of him, yes.
Yes, and he came out and I had him on the show last year. He goes, "You know, I'm doing this really interesting thing because we have these messages And nobody's really paying attention to them. And you're spending some time thinking about that, so I want to hear your point of view. He goes, I had to do for the Bondi Rescue Show a skydiving thing. So I listened to everything on skydiving, thought I had it all squared away in my head. I got up in the plane and I froze. And if I could have done anything to make that plane go down, I would have. And he goes, this is what I'm going to do for rip currents. And he mentioned grip the rip and stay calm and don't panic and everything that makes people scared of rips. So he started taking people in rip currents. So we brought him out, and it was Kalani Vieira. I'm sure you maybe have heard of him or something. So, okay, he goes, Margaret, this is a good idea. Let's do it. I'm collaborating with the Okinawa lifeguard people to teach them about jet ski operation. And he came out in the middle of the week in the worst weather we've had in February and got 30 people in a rip in different groups. And just he knew rips that well. People are going, oh no, I don't think that's gonna work. It worked. And he told people, don't swim. And then he said, turn around and see how far you've gone. See where you are. It's coming back in where the waves are breaking, and you're gonna come up on a sandbar. People walked away going, now I understand. I'm not afraid of that. So what do you think? I mean, you're
Yeah, I
studying
think
all
that's
this now.
it's a great, I think that's anything to get awareness out, I'm for 100%. I will say though, when you're looking at something like that, the psychological processing of your current situation is going to be different, right? Because in a controlled setting like that,
Right.
you have someone there to help you. Unless, I mean, it's not per se control, but there are safety mechanisms in place to prevent you from drowning.
Right.
You take someone out of that and you put them in a rip current and there's no one else there or no one with flotation to help them, just how you process this information is going to be different, right? And kind of like I said, as far as you as self-awareness, understanding your fight or flight, now you're in danger. So I think it helps show that rip currents aren't is not like a some type of crazy creature that's going to pull you under the water or anything like that. It's simply a small river or a small channel of water going out to sea. So I think it's great to get that information out because most people don't understand it. But how you're going to process that information in a controlled setting versus per se the real life is going to be different.
Of course, but I kind of my personal opinion is at least you experienced it, even with somebody who at least you can feel what's happening. There was a guy, Ian Couch, who runs the world's toughest row, and they row from California all the way to Kauai. And his whole piece for as a water safety piece was emotional inoculation. So he prepares people, and I'm sure you do the same thing, on the worst case scenario possible, right? And they visualize it. And that's what he does. That's a piece of his water safety piece. So anyway, it was a innovative idea in terms of messaging. So what do you think the messaging should be for rip currents? I mean, you just told me 60, and you're saying that's because you have a lot of people, they're just coming to the beach for the first time. What do you think?
Yeah, so I mean, again, messaging needs to be universal, and it needs to be for the entire, pretty much the entire world, right? And so,
Yes.
what we have are people who vacation down here. They might be coming down here for a day or a week from, it could be inland North Carolina, it could be, inland in the country, somewhere up north, and they're coming down on vacation, right? And so they are not going to have a situation where they are going to probably really understand rip currents, most likely, unless they kind of read up on it preparing, for vacation or something. So I think that to really, if we are going to make a conscious effort to, hopefully prevent these rip current related drownings, it needs to be a simple message that gets across to everyone that everyone can understand and implement. And I think a first step is, again, they need to understand how dangerous the ocean can be, for multiple reasons, but also the importance of flotation. Again, I think it was great, starting things like swim parallel and definitely don't panic. And those are all amazing things. But when you're getting someone who is not a confident swimmer or may not know how to swim at all, those things don't work, right? And so that person's going to drown. They're going to drown very quickly. So they need to have some form of flotation with them. If they are going to enter the ocean and there are no lifeguards, maybe it's not a guarded beach or the lifeguards are off duty, it's imperative that they take some form of flotation with them.
Okay.
Kind of on that same measure, something that came out of Maui, I think you're seeing a lot of coastal regions implement are the rescue tubes. So these are tubes that are placed at different accesses or on piers or places like that, to where if a bystander sees someone drowning, at least there is something there to take in for some type of flotation. And just after this past Saturday night, we had three victims that got caught in a almost a permanent rip underneath one of our piers, and a bystander on top of that pier threw one of those rescue tubes down to them and gave them something to hold on to and float until they were able to get brought to shore. So, again, it's just, I think, speaks to the importance of having flotation readily available.
Yes, that was started on Kauai here by Dr. Monty Downs. I'm part of the Kauai Lifeguard Association. And
Okay.
at the time he was president and he started that, he saw so many drownings. And we have so many areas. I don't know if you've been to Kauai, there are a lot of areas where we have no lifeguards. And that has,
Yes.
they've done the research to say it decreased drownings. Yes, so I agree with that tremendously. And we have some more coming to all the islands now. We're getting 100 more here. One of the issues for that is maintaining them and making sure that they're all okay and not attached to a tree, but into a stand, right?
Yeah.
And that somebody isn't just take, because here in that situation, they could throw it off a pier. But if somebody is like 50 yards or more caught out there, you better be a competent swimmer, and that's what it says on these things. I'm sure you have the same ones we do, right? Okay.
Yeah, we have the same ones. We order actually, I think from Branch out
Branch,
there in
yes.
Hawaii. Yeah,
Yeah, Branch
great.
is here.
Great guy. I actually spoke to him extensively.
Oh,
And
good.
one of the issues we were concerned with when we implemented it was, okay, theft. Are people going to steal them? And I was honestly, I was expecting for them to get stolen and get stolen pretty quickly. But I will say that I think in the 3 to 4 years we've had them, we've had maybe one or two stolen. People tend to, see the value in it. A lot of the locals really police it as well. They're letting us know, like, hey, this one is missing. But again, if you get one, two, three stolen a year, I mean, it's still worth it, right? Because I think it
Yeah.
really is proven. It's been proven here on several occasions, but throughout the world, the different places they are, it's a valuable, resource. And so, again, we have gotten pushback that, is this encouraging, people to enter a dangerous environment, things like
Correct.
that. I don't agree with it at all. I think it's a resource for them. And we see so many times that rescuers go out to make a rescue for someone that's in distress, and they are the ones that ultimately end up fatally drowning, and the person in distress ultimately makes it in. So.
Right, that's correct. So, of these 60 rip current incidents, were they, explain to me what they were. Were people caught in a rip, or were they about to go in a rip, or what constituted 60?
Again, it's been a busy time of year. The weather has mostly been nice, for us. But we've had a couple weeks of a little bit of groundswell coming in, and so the rip currents are 1,000% tied to the swell activity, right? And so we had a little bit of groundswell, a little bit longer intervals, and not a real strong wind. And so while the rip currents aren't overly strong, it's not, going to be the ones you see from the West Coast or California that are going out 150, 200 yards. These might only pull you 15 yards out, right? But it's enough, again, for people to get distressed and the drowning process starts. So those, what we consider a rescue, is that our lifeguards are making contact with a swimmer and bringing them in. So we try to be preventative as much as possible. So the lifeguards recognize, people getting close to a rip or in a rip. They will try to get them out. But, often, as it happens very quickly. So these are, I think 60-ish is where we're at now. Lifeguard, swimmer interactions.
Wow. And so your lifeguards, not like here in Hawaii, which is all year round, they're only for the summer. Is that correct at Wrightsville?
They are. I'm fortunate to have lieutenants that are. They're considered part-time, or full-time. Part-time permanent. But pretty much in this part of the country, lifeguards are categorized as circus workers, the same as a circus worker would be. And so they're part-time seasonal. So meaning that they're not privileged to overtime, health care, benefits, anything like that.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's something
I would
I
stop
hope to
using that
change.
term, Sam, because we passed a resolution here where everybody thinks it's great. I think it's like New Year's resolutions, but resolution that lifeguards should be first responders. I haven't talked to anybody in the world who doesn't see that as a chain of rescue work that lifeguards play a huge role, and whether they're only 4 months out of the year or all year round, they're the first on the scene for
Yeah.
almost anything. And if you talk to Justin Semstrad, he'll talk about micro delays, right? Micro delays matter. And so who's first there? Lifeguards. Lifeguards are there. They're first responders. So I know California is trying to put a resolution in. I think North Carolina should do the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's been a push. Have you heard anything else about it recently? Yeah, it's definitely been a push, and again, I'm not an attorney. I'm sure it's other reasons. It's not as easy as saying yes, they are. At least I like to think it's not that easy. But absolutely. I mean, with that being said, also, it's an inherent risk that all the lifeguards take working out there.
Yes.
And every year we have multiple lifeguards that get injured. And we have some more video from I think 2 weeks ago where they're making a jet ski rescue off the rocks of an inlet we have here. And the rescue swimmers all scraped up from the barnacles. And I mean, there's an inherent risk every time they make a rescue, with that. And they're doing it time and time again. I mean, while this summer started off busy, last year when we had some hurricane swell, we had 60 rescues in one day, over 100 and I think 30 for a week. Right. And so, those, like I said, and that's how it happens here. We could go 3 weeks and maybe have one or two rescues because we don't have any ground swell, or the winds or whatever. But it can also flip and we're getting a storm offshore. For us, especially here, we get a hurricane, it could be 1,000 miles off the coast, but we have perfectly blue skies, sunny skies, and a lot of rips. And so, like I said, it's not, like I said, it's not the days that it's cloudy and it looks horrible out. It's the days where, it's just a 2-3 foot wave coming in. And that's, like I said, they're really the busiest times for us.
I think that's a big misconception about rifts is that the ocean is only scary when it looks scary, but honestly, it's scary when it looks beautiful.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think if you look back or you look at statistics, I think the vast majority of drownings occur on green and yellow flag days, not red. And so, often red flag days, people understand it. It's a lot of messaging going out, or the ocean might just look horrible. And they're like, ah, this is not for us. Let's go watch a movie or go to go play putt-putt instead, but it's the days where it looks inviting and you don't recognize the risk. And that's when the drownings occur.
Okay, so there's two things you brought up. Lifeguards as first responders, and you're telling me they're risking their lives, and I know that. Maybe there should be more messaging about that, the things that they do to keep people to respond, to keep them alive, like this woman in North Carolina. That was great. But you've just told me a story on a jet ski where people were all ripped up from going to s save somebody. Those stories should come out more and more so people can respect who's out there on the beaches. And we tell people here all the time, ask a lifeguard, but I don't know if people really do that. Do you have that kind of messaging?
What do you mean by ask a lifeguard? What are you
Before
referring
you
to?
get in the water, go ask a lifeguard how the conditions are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we encourage, like I said, our kind of standard messaging is make sure you're, visiting the beach when the lifeguards are actually working, right? So Memorial Day through Labor Day, and that they are in the lifeguard stand. So 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And make note of the flag color. Yellow is caution, red is danger, do not enter the water. But yeah, I mean, lifeguards are there for all the beach patrons. So please speak to them. Any questions you have, like I said, that's what they're there for. They're there for, your safety.
I think an opportunity Good Morning America has because you told me this happened after hours, right? There
Yeah.
was a good point for them to say this was a successful rescue, but it happened after hours. And the message should be you should go to beaches during the hours when guards are on duty. To me, that would have been the perfect piece to have put in to people could resonate with that. Wow, she was lucky that people got there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just need to understand, I think, what beach you're visiting. So, not all beaches in North Carolina have lifeguards. Sometimes their hours are different, things like that. So, just I think a really standardized messaging. Another thing to keep in mind is that during the summer months, we often have afternoon storms, here in on the East Coast. And so when we have lightning within 10 miles, the lifeguards have to get out of the lifeguard stand. So if there's no flag flying, although you typically think, okay, it's only 2 p.m., a lifeguard should be in there. Well, if there's no flag and it's lightning out, again, you're just relying on a response basis. I mean, we're still out there, we're still driving the beach, but you don't have these lifeguards in the lifeguard stands for their safety.
Oh, that's very interesting. So let's move on to what you're doing as a doctoral student, right, at Virginia Tech. Can you tell me something about that? And are you studying behavior or AI or what can you tell me what you're doing? Because I
Yeah,
think
so a majority of my research there, a lot of it actually has been with Dr. Simsrod. So we did, I think 2 years ago, and maybe it was Dr. Spillman in there as well. We did a case study on PTSD following drowning. We have just finished up a retrospective analysis using the CARES database on the drowning protocol in North Carolina. So we went and looked at all the drownings that occurred since 2008. And we looked at it was kind of a pre-post study analysis to understand, is there a statistically significant difference in survival to hospital discharge and then CPC or your neurological outcomes since we implemented the drowning protocol. So that's been submitted for publication. And we're also looking or working now, hopefully, to start a study with UNCW, which is the local college here, using AI to analyze about 10 years of drone video to understand really the characteristics and behaviors of the rip currents that we have on video to understand how they are really their behavior and is the current messaging accurate. So there are some thoughts that. If you don't panic, you stay in that rip, often you will be brought back to that sandbar, right? Because you kind of see this swirling motion, it brings you back. It's also a question on, swimming parallel. And so, it makes complete sense, absolutely. But if you have someone who is in distress, who's starting to panic, you want to swim parallel, but you want to swim with the longshore. Right. So if it's, a typical day here, we have winds out of the south and you start swimming south against the longshore. Now you're not only swimming against the rip current, you're also swimming against the longshore. Right. And so understanding that, it does would that work? If we can take these videos and analyze them in a way to say, look, someone was in this rip current and we understand how much energy is expended, if you are fighting a rip, would they have been able to get out of it? And I think lastly, we're looking at is, again, when you're looking at the head of the rip, the very end, is it swirling with or towards the longshore or away from it? And I'll be very honest, just me, very high level, I was like, absolutely, the rip current will pull you out and it's going to swirl with the longshore, right, to push you. And the majority of the video we have is actually the exact opposite. For some reason, these are coming out and they're swirling into the longshore, right? And that's almost creating more of this like a hydraulic or swirl effect. So again, we're hoping to at least understand a little bit better about the behavior. And maybe that will, it might support the messaging that's out there right now. Maybe it says, you know what, more research is needed, but I think it's a start.
That's interesting. So, for our listeners, what is longshore?
So longshore is really for us, it'd be the movement north to south or south to north. So when you have wind here along the coast, like I said, typically is in the summer, it's typically out of the south. In the winter, sometimes it can be predominantly out of the north, but it creates the water moving north to south. So let's say if we have a strong wind out of the south and you hop in the water, you're going to get pushed north. So often, like little kids, let's say if they're missing, they get in the ocean. When we're looking at if we don't have any information about which way they were walking on the beach, other than that they went in the water with a boogie board, where most often, okay, the longshore is going south to north, they probably got pushed north and then got out. So that's typically, how it works. Everything that goes in the water is going to move up the coast. And if we have the wind predominantly out of the north, it's going to be pushed south or down the coast.
That sounds like a message you should have.
Yeah, I mean, again, but a lot of things go into that. Again, weather is very dynamic. A longshore can go from very weak or non-existent to very strong when we start getting, the sea breeze in the afternoons. So again, I think for people who understand the ocean, the beach is great information. But again, we're also looking at these people who are from inland, right? And only come down here 1 week out of the year to visit. They know very little about the ocean, how to keep them from drowning.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? We have that question here we're trying to answer. We have task force trying to work on different things, and maybe we should get people to swim. And I think it's more about water competency and how do you survive in the ocean and understand the ocean. So, one more question on your AI. So, you're telling me you're giving an AI your drone stuff on rip currents. Is that correct? Is that what you're
Yes. So we implemented some drones here back in 2016, and we've had them out there almost, most of the days during the summer when we've had heavy rip current activity. And so
Really?
we have a lot of video, yeah, that will be, it flying, up and down the coast, and it captures rip currents that are occurring. Again, a lot of these days, particularly when we get closer to August, we might have some tropical activity in the Atlantic. And so, we have a lot of rip current activity going on. And so we have video with that. And so that's what we're looking to analyze.
And so somebody in your group is running the drones daily or something?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so we've had someone within either the fire department, ocean rescue, and then now also our police department has a drone as well. And so, yeah, we're fortunate. Like I said, we are able to capture a lot of data in really like roughly about a 100-day period.
Wow, that sounds like really interesting information that you're getting. And so hopefully from that, you think you can form some messaging, do you think?
I think it's the first step in understanding, what the messaging should look like, and maybe again, what other research or avenues we should look at for messaging. But again, this is going to be messaging that's going to be, for this person who is a distressed swimmer, right? They are caught in a rip at this point and how to stay alive. But I think for us to be successful, we need to look way before that. Like I said, get messaging out. Rip current awareness prevention starts before you leave your home.
So, do you have water safety education in the schools?
We do. So two. So we have a junior guard program. We have three camps a season. We run roughly about 150, 160 kids through that each summer. But we also have something we started about 2 years ago, a very strong community outreach. And the person running that is our other lieutenant, Craig Dodson, and he was actually lifeguard of the year this past year, the Ben Carlson lifeguard of the year. And he got that for many reasons, but I think the strongest was the emphasis and efforts he's put into community awareness. He spends the winter in, inner city schools, everything to get beach safety information out.
So he does it just by himself? He goes to the schools?
He does. So he has other guards that work with him. So we have some other guards here who are volunteering their time. They were collegiate swimmers teaching swim lessons, a lot of stuff, with the Boys and Girls Club, some underprivileged, kids, but again, we're one small department in Southeast North Carolina, and we're, trying to get our community and then the city. And, I think each year our, network or our net goes out a little bit further west, so maybe Raleigh and Charlotte, and we're making great, I think, progress, and it's only growing. And we've been very fortunate with our community and our town and our elected officials with supporting of that and understanding the importance of community outreach. But us alone aren't going to reach the people in Ohio or in the Midwest about getting that information. So when they come out here, for their week vacation or a couple of days or whatever, like I said, we can't get to them. So that's where we rely, I think, a lot on the media and a lot on, other avenues to really get this information out across the entire country and across the entire world.
That's correct. So we'll go back to Good Morning America. Maybe they be running a piece more. They did you see the Waterwise piece they did here for Hawaii on drowning? And it actually was a piece. showing kids who were fishing, and it was very well done about the issues we're facing as having the second highest drowning rate in the country. So, maybe we just need more of that. But to your point, the education should start before they leave their home. Do you have any ideas about how we do that?
Again, I think this is probably done by people, way smarter than I am, what this campaign should look like. But, again, I mean, I think it's a twofold, right? It's important to understand if you are unfortunately caught in a rip current, what you can do, what's your best efforts, knowing that, you're going to have limited time. You're probably going to, like I said, expend a lot of energy, how to stay afloat. So I think that's definitely important. But, beach safety as a whole, I think we need to focus a lot more on starts, like I said, before you go out that front door and understanding things like lightning. Every year we seem to have people, struck by lightning, not understanding that. It's other things, and rip currents would be part of that. But, going to the beach, we love it. Everyone loves going in the ocean, spending your time, a great vacation. But you want that vacation to be a positive thing. You don't want to, leave the beach in a situation to where you've lost a loved one or someone is permanently injured. And so, like I said, really focusing on this beach awareness and safety before you leave your home to go to the beach.
Okay, so there's one other question I want to ask you about. You did a study about PTSD, right? Are you talking about first responders? Oh, yes.
Yes,
Yes.
ma'am. And I can send you the article. So it was more of a case study. So we looked at a single individual that had a initially a fatal drown. Well, it eventually became a non-fatal drowning, but they had drowned. And looking at the psychological impact and long-term impact of that, because the thought is that there's been more, maybe not as published cases to where PTSD, mental health, things like that. For the person that has drowned has become a real thing, right? And so we looked at that. On that, the flip side though is that I think it's also important when we're talking about things like PTSD and mental health is to have a program for the lifeguards as well. So, for us, unfortunately, I've worked with five individuals that have suffered mental health issues that ultimately end up taking their own life. All start out as lifeguards, and so I think it's very important to make sure that we're watching out for them as well. Unfortunately, like I said, they're part-time seasonal, so we might have a 19-year-old lifeguard come out here, just a young person, right? Hasn't even really experienced life. Have someone drown, see CPR, and maybe it's in their water. Maybe they had no control of it, but they, maybe not openly, but they blame themselves for it. And that just kind of builds and builds. And I don't think that we understand really how to address that, particularly if they don't come back, right? And so, both sides, I think, are, definitely equally as important.
Yes, and do you know the people who are doing the international study on mental health and first responders? It's a survey that people Jazz Laws from Australia and Tyler, I can't remember his last name, from the United States. They've put together a survey, and it's till the end of July for everybody to who, every lifeguard, first responder, to fill out, so they have this information. It's a very good piece of research.
Okay.
I should send that to you so you
Yeah,
have it.
please do. Please do.
We have a lot of guards here who talk about that, and we're in the same situation where we don't have the resources for the kind of support that's needed. And that's one of the issues about being a first responder. You'd have those resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't make any sense. You're risking your life. Right. And it could be a 19-year-old, or maybe it's a 29-year-old. It doesn't really matter. But that trauma goes not just with the guard, but for the family, the community. And that makes, to me, is another issue. It's just not another drowning. We kind of get here, we go, well, somebody else drowned, whether it's
Yeah.
fatal or non-fatal. It's pretty consistent here. And so we've got to get better data. We need to understand what the issues are. Like you said, people come from different places. They don't know the ocean. It looks beautiful. It's a summer. They can't wait to get in the water. And we got to
Right.
find out how to get them to stop and be mindful and think about what they're approaching. It's a different environment than they need to understand, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%.
Okay, well, I think it was really nice of you to come on because
Yeah,
just.
no, happy. Like I said, I appreciate, like I said, you trying to any avenue to get, awareness out. Jamie, do you have anything you want to add? Yeah.
He should get over in the camera so we can see him because it won't be video. Let's see.
Oh, she's blowing
Hi.
it.
I think Jamie should his input here.
Yeah, do you have anything you think you want to add?
No, I think the biggest thing is just like being prepared and honestly, I think hammer down flotation. Like, I think every family when they come out to the ocean should bring some type of flotation with them, whether they're going to use it or not. It's just there as like a backup. So your kid goes out, he gets pulled out in a rip, and you need to go out. You know you have flotation and go out and help. It's like bring a boogie board. You could maybe buy yourself your own rescue tube. Bring your surfboard.
Right.
Even if use it, bring some type of like I think every family should bring some type of flotation out with them.
Okay. So are you going to suggest that to everybody that's coming to Wrightsville?
I would love to if I
Yeah.
could.
Yeah, again, I mean, I think it's the same messaging, right? So our lifeguards are on the stands from Memorial Day through Labor Day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Again, make sure you're always swimming your lifeguard stand, make note of the flag color. If it's red, obviously don't get in the ocean. If it's yellow, you definitely need to, still use caution, but take some type of flotation in the water with you. Again, I mean, we rescue a lot of, kids that are, caught in rips on boogie boards. And so, I mean, it happens, but we go out and get them. And it's, like I said, they're fine, but sometimes you still see it, even with a boogie board, is that they'll throw the flotation and start trying to swim against the rip. And at that point, most of the time, they realize they're not going to be successful and they get back on the board and wait. But again, that's the whole process of you're starting to panic, and that's right when the drowning process starts.
So, do you think when you rescue them and you come in and you explain this, you were in a rip, you don't want to swim back towards that rip, this is how you should do it. Do you think that is adequate information, or are you doing it enough, or should you do it more?
I mean, we'd always love to do it more. I mean, it's, and again, sometimes it's tough. You're talking to, we like I said, especially with the community outreach, try to reach, all communities, people, different backgrounds, different beliefs, different, everything. And sometimes it's just not, overly receptive. They're like, okay, maybe I'll think about it. But again, that's why, with the Junior Guard program, it's great because we've had, several junior guards actually rescue beach patrons that were caught in rips, after they went through the camp, understanding, how to make a rescue, taking flotation. But it's also been situations to where they have let their parents know, it's like, hey, you know what? We shouldn't go to the beach. It's 4:30 and a lifeguard will be leaving 30 minutes. So let's go tomorrow. Just understanding things about why it can be so dangerous.
Yeah, junior guards are a big program here, but it doesn't reach everybody and it doesn't reach visitors. So that's the key. Maybe we should do junior guards for visitors.
I mean, like I said, anything to get the messaging out. The media, I think, here they do a good job. They especially, when we're flying red flags, they really try to, push the information out. And we've implemented, our town has things like Code Red, which is emergency, text alerts, things like that. Getting the information out on those dangerous days. But again, when we're making, 300, 400, even 500 rescues in a 100-day period, that's people either aren't listening or they're not getting their information. And then, when we are having fatal and non-fatal drownings, again, that just shows that, the messaging is not either reaching everybody or they're not paying attention to it. So how do we overcome that?
Well, that's the question we're trying to answer here. So it's a universal one.
Yeah.
And Dr. Spielman said, you can't tell people what to do. They have to own it. It has to be their value system. And I think expecting lifeguards is one of the first ones that they're there to do a job and you shouldn't put their lives in danger by doing something risky. And you should be listening to them. Number one.
Yeah. And, I'll have to send you the information. I know there's, it's a lot of talk, particularly when you're looking at like pools, right? So for parents, and it's a card that they put around the wrist and they are the observer, right? So this parent is with a group of other parents and kids, but they're not on their phone or anything. Their sole responsibility for half an hour is to observe the kids in the water, things like that, which, it seems to work. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head how many of those cards have gone out, but a lot of them have. Right. And so at least it's getting on people's minds, say, hey, you know what? For the next 30 minutes, my sole responsibility is to watch these four or five kids in the pool to make sure they're safe. And then you pass the card off. Those are all unique things. I think they're great. I think we have so many great people within ocean rescue and lifeguards, out in Hawaii, the West Coast, the East Coast, a Dr. Simspot, Spillman, the IDRA, the Research Alliance, all these great avenues and smart people. I think that I think we're gonna come to a good conclusion soon on what this messaging looks like. And I think it's gonna be, hopefully it's gonna be successful for us.
I agree with you. I think, drowning prevention wasn't a field for a while. Now people are getting PhDs in the area. And, we could say we're not making much progress with laws, but people are talking more about
They are.
and everything. It seems to be much more apparent than it has been in the last couple of years. So I guess that's progress, Sam.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Yeah, the first step is, always awareness. And like I said, we might not get everything we want, right away, but like you said, the conversations are being had. A lot of smart people are working on it. It's a lot of interest on. I think people realize, wow, just knowing the numbers that we know, that we ultimately know are misrepresented, is still way too high. So something has to be done. So to your point, like I said, it's a way more awareness now than I've ever seen, which is great. And I think it's going in the right direction.
Does North Carolina have a water safety plan?
So I don't think we have a like North Carolina only water safety plan. So I know that was I read part of the, I guess,
The
what
why?
was it? The yeah, that, yeah. And then the one that they did, like the, I guess for everywhere, like, I don't know if it's like a,
United States Water Safety Plan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't necessarily have one just for North Carolina, but I will say we're talking about other areas. Puerto Rico has made significant strides with generate or creating a lifeguarding program down there. They first implemented the rescue tubes. We sent them a bunch of information and buoys and stuff. And I think 2 weeks ago got sent from Greg Carlson down there their water rescue plan for Puerto Rico. And
Oh, that's
so yeah, I mean, but this is one or two guys who volunteered their time. They recognized it as a problem. They weren't going to stand for these drownings to continue to occur, and they took the ownership and made it happen. And now it's kind of, starting to build. And I think, Puerto Rico is starting to, financially be invested in it and to really bring a, vetted program. But I'll send you his information as well. But he's done great things down there for Puerto Rico.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I'll send you the Hawaii Water Safety Plan so you can
Yeah,
see
please do. I'd love to read it. Yeah.
what we're trying to accomplish here. So,
Yeah.
one thing about AI, you're doing AI with drones, but we all know AI is here to stay. I dealt with a guy in Dubai named Luke Cunningham who runs Blue Technology, and they have no lifeguards, and he's a lifeguard from actually from the UK, came to live in Dubai with his wife and has started this technology AI company to recognize people drowning in unlifeguarded beaches. Do you know much about that arena of
I
AI?
don't. Actually, I have something in my email from a gentleman, I think at Surfline, that is also implementing an AI program for part of it, I think, for statistics, so beach populations and then erosion. And it also recognizes distressed swimmers, things like that. So I think, to your point, it's a couple of companies that seem to be focusing on that.
Do you think it's going to continue to develop, in your opinion, or?
I think it will, and I think it's probably a place for it. It's kind of, I think, a unique time for us because we're seeing a lot more technology coming into, water safety. We're seeing things like the autonomous, driven buoys that, go out to a person.
Right.
And it's I I think we need to embrace it. I think it's a place for it. I mean, here in the Carolinas, we have a lot of beaches that aren't staffed. They don't have lifeguards. So for anyone to say, oh, you know, autonomous, you know, buoy is garbage. It's going to do away with lifeguard. To not, you know, be open-minded, I think is detrimental. I think, you know, it's not going to be for everyone. But again, I think AI, like you said, to your point, is here to stay. I think it offers a lot of benefits. It just needs to be used, I think, in combination with lifeguards. It should never be anything that they're like, okay, well, we don't have to pay lifeguards. We can get an AI platform. That will never work. At least I don't believe it will, but I think they can, you know, really, you know, benefit each other.
It's always going to be a collaboration, because even Luke Cunningham said, I could set up something for you, and you, the lifeguards, have to give me data so we can keep making it better and better in terms of what we're seeing. So
yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to operate on its own, at least for the near future, but it certainly would enhance possibly lifeguarding, you know, in the United States, or at least.
Yeah. And again, you know, those programs, you know, capture a significant amount of data that we're not capturing, you know, and it can be analyzed. And I think it can be used, like I said, to, you know, just get a better understanding of, you know, rip current activity, you know, people's behavior, things like that. So, you know, I'm all for it. Like I said, I don't think it should ever be looked at as replacing lifeguards, but like you said, as a collaboration.
Well, Sam, I'm going to leave it here, because I didn't realize you were head of the guards, a fireman, a medic, have an MBA, a master's in public health, and working on your doctorate at Virginia Tech. And do you have a thesis going in?
I do. So, yeah, so I look at mainly emergency messaging. So, you know, and really the cognitive aspects of that, how people process messaging, and whether that comes from a human, AI, how that messaging is vetted, things like that. So what I look at are, you know, how can we tailor these messages utilizing AI to where people are receptive to it? You know, maybe that's individual, you know, tailored messages for you that's different from me or Jamie. But, you know, like I said, really understanding how we can be collaborative or collaborate with AI to, you know, make really a custom messaging that might be better received.
Well, that's just answering the question we've been trying to answer for the last hour. Your work,
yeah, well,
your dissertation, but you were not going to share this with me. Your work.
Yeah, I think we're a long way from offering, you know, anything that's going to solve this problem. But like, again, to your point, I think it's a step, you know, the process is started.
You're being too modest. I think you're exactly on the right trail. Repeat that again. You're looking at messaging. Say that again, because I wasn't quite clear. So
yes, ma'am. So really, the psychological processing of messaging. So if you're receiving a message with behavioral recommendations that are, you know, to save your life, whether it could be evacuation or rip current, you know, how to, you know, stab a rip, how to, you know, get out of a rip, whatever it is, you know, how these messages are perceived, how they're processed, you know, cognitively based on things like effective misforecasting, and how we can best tailor these messages for them to be perceived by ultimately, you know, the end receiver and the hopes of, you know, influencing their behavior. So, you know, if we should look at, like I said, you know, we have a plethora of information on people, whether it's through their social media or whatever, you know, instead of just sending out one universal message to millions of different people, maybe these messages can be tailored utilizing AI to where they're perceived and interpreted, and we get the outcome we're looking for, rather than just kind of throwing it against, you know, a million people and hoping something works.
So is this an algorithm?
So it can be. We're, like I said, a lot more on the psychological processing of it. So understanding, you know, when you're getting a message, particularly knowing that it could be either sent by AI with AI information processed, you know, at a very high level, how are you processing that? And how is that processing different than, let's say, an old school message that's coming just from a person based on human inputs?
Okay, so you got me curious. How far are you into this work?
So we're about to do the final four studies right now. And so we're at the end of it. And so, like I said, it's been, I think we probably have, you know, 1,000, 1,500 data points, you know, to analyze. We've gotten some great, you know, information out of it, things that people don't think of, just, you know, things like, your religious beliefs, and the area you live and, things, ethnicity, all of those things, how they impact on the information that you perceive and whether you're more likely to, take their recommendations and it impacts your behavior, right? And so, like I said, I think with that information, at least we can have a better understanding of, a universal message is obviously not for everybody. And so we need to think about tailoring those to get, I think, better results.
This is going to be interesting research. So,
Hopefully.
I think so. I think it's great. I mean, just one other question. This is generally what you're talking about, factors, psychological factors. It's got nothing to do with demographics, like people in Hawaii or anything like that, but nothing about culture or
So,
indigenous.
yeah, so when we're looking at demographics, obviously we're looking at everything. So, sex, your location, your education, religious beliefs, anything that could be, covariates it within, that analysis. So we look at all of those, and then we also look at, factors that have come out as being important across the entire data set or your sample, and we're fine-tuning those and adjusting them one way or the other and seeing if that influences the outcome. And if it does, then we can say, look, from our analysis, which has, been statistically significant, altering at least these factors that we've come up with, can influence how a person interprets the message and are more likely to behave on the recommendations of that message.
And then you would do some kind of pilot study?
Yeah, probably that. Yeah, look at, I mean, but we have things, like I said, like code red or emergency alerts, text messages that come across your phone, the weather alerts that come across, things like that. So, it's great, it gets information out, but there's also messaging fatigue. So, we need to be very specific on these messages we send out. They need to be sent out with a purpose, but we need to send them out in a way that we're most likely to get you to, your behavior to do what's most likely to save your life.
That's correct. Yeah, because with social media, we're just like bombarded with everything.
Yeah,
So I
and
think
some of
this.
it's not accurate. So that's a story for another day.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to continue this at another time. When do you defend this thesis?
It'll be August, beginning of August.
Oh, wow. This is.
Yeah, only a couple more months left. So, yeah.
Well, it'll be Dr. Prophet. I'll be
Well,
talking.
hopefully. Oh,
I want to hear more about this when you come back. Thank you so much for coming on. And Jamie Mead, thank you so much also for your contribution to bringing flotations to the beach. I think that's a great idea, you
yeah.
know? Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, if you need anything else, like I said, please reach out. And then, yeah, please send me that water safety plan. I'd love to look over it.
I'll bring that and you keep me in touch with your thesis presentation or what is it called? That's
Defense?
what defense your
Yeah.
thesis defense. Who is your thesis person?
So I have a, I have a committee. So it goes. So I have, yeah. So I have five members from Virginia Tech on the committee. So
Well, I'm here to tell the Virginia Tech committee that I think Sam Prophet is great.
well, I'll go if you can send that to me in a recording, I'll be sure to forward it along. Yeah.
They can just listen to your interview.
Well, thank you so much for bringing us on. We appreciate it.
No, I thank you for taking the time. That I know that's a busy season for you. So thank you so much.